Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for this Thursday, February 11th, 2021. My name is Frank Hornstein. I'm a state representative from Minneapolis, and I'm the chair of the committee. And our first item of business is going to be to take the role of the committee. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Representative Petersburg.
Present.
Representative Barr.
Present.
Representative Bernardi. Representative Bernardi. Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Hausman.
Present.
Representative Heinrich.
Heinrich, present.
Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Representative Mason.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Torkelson.
Present.
Representative West.
Here.
There is a quorum.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dodge. Our next item of business is approval of the minutes from February 9th, 2021. Is there a motion, Representative Petersburg?
You did.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes of the February 9th meeting of this committee.
Representative Petersburg moves the minutes. This is a voice vote, so if folks could just very quickly unmute. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, the motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, you're muted.
Sorry about that. thank you, members. We have several bills we're going to go through today. We have a couple of highway and bridge. We have a couple of bridge and highway naming bills, an important bill related to DWI, e-bikes, and data privacy are on the agenda for today. And our first bill is House File 482. Representative Petersburg, you can move this bill to the Ways and Means Committee, and then make your opening comments, and you can present your testifiers. Representative Petersburg, thank you very much. I don't have to welcome you to the committee. You're a very important member of this committee, but still welcome, and I'm very happy to hear your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move this bill to the Ways and Means Committee. Was it 482 to Ways and Means Committee? So this bill
Petersburg moves the bill.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chair and committee, this bill is about a young man from Waseca that sacrificed the ultimate in his duty over in Afghanistan back in 2014. It was during my first term as a freshman when this happened, and we did have a resolution and a moment of silence in the House chamber for his passing and his sacrifice. And there was a processional from the airport to Waseca when his body came back as well. And so we're asking for Highway 13 through Waseca to be named as Caleb Erickson Memorial. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mike Perry, and he will kind of direct the other testifiers as to why this is important and a little bit more about Caleb's sacrifice and the person that he was. So I would like to turn over to former Senator Mike Perry.
Thank you very much, Representative. Mr. Chairman and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to have our testifiers before you on House File number 482, a very important testimony you'll hear today. We will move our testifiers through pretty rapidly. They've all prepared their statements, and I will orchestrate bringing them before you. First and foremost, I'd like to thank our commander of the American Legion Post 228, Lamar Cooster, for being here in support. You can see him behind me. Let's move on to our testifying at this time. Our first testifier is our veteran service officer from Waseca County, Mr. Chris Hinton. Chris?
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hinton. If you could please state your name for our official record.
You don't want me to do that? Oh, okay. Yeah. Hi,
I apologize. There we there. Go.
Sorry about that, everyone. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members, and those present. My name is Christopher Hinton. I am the County Veteran Service Officer for Waseca County. I've prepared a statement for you. I want to talk a little bit about the importance of memory. Whenever we lose one of our own, it's tragic and it's heart-wrenching to those that are closest to the fallen, their families and their friends who will always remember them. When a military member gives their life, it's no small thing. It truly is the ultimate sacrifice. A sacrifice should be known and never forgotten. To do this is to truly commemorate that service member's life and their actions. We've had many events here. We've held vigils so as to show our appreciation to Caleb and for his actions. Naming this section of highway after him is no small thing. We know this. As people pass through Waseca County on Highway 13, they're going to see signs and it will drive conversation. Children will ask their parents, who is this person? Why is this highway named after them? And their parents will be able to tell them who he was and what he did for them. In the case that they don't know, they're going to be able to easily look it up. Either way, he will not be forgotten. His memory will live on. And through that memory, we will show our appreciation for him and his deeds. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Veteran Service Officer Chris Hinton. Now I'd like to move on quickly because I felt it important that the committee, Mr. Chairman, heard a couple of words from a person who's in charge of our honor guard, the guys that get together and actually lay our soldiers fallen down. So, Mr. Stan Call, our Sergeant of Arms.
Good afternoon,
Welcome
everyone.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Call, and again, please state your name for our record.
My name is Stan Call, and I'm the Sergeant at Arms here at Waseca Post 228 for the American Legion. And I want to thank you for this opportunity. One of my duties is to ensure that the veterans, all the veterans, have received a proper military funeral and burial. And with that, we do the three-shot volley, we do the bugle, the taps, and we also do the presentation of the flag. And one of my humbling responsibilities is to present the flag to the family. And I've presented a lot of flags to several families, and I can't think of one time that I haven't presented a flag, stood up and stood back and saluted this flag. And in my mind, I'm wondering, what else can we do or what else could I do for this family? And I think this would be a great opportunity for us to do something more. And with that, I thank you guys, thank everyone for the time, and have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Call.
And now I'd like to call in the mother of Corporal Caleb Erickson. Carla Erickson is with us here to talk a little about her son.
Hello. Hello. I'm Carla Madden. I'm Caleb's mom. He was, you know, the typical boy. He's easygoing, fun-loving, always could make a person laugh. He had a heart of gold and a smile that was even bigger. When growing up, of course, you know, he had the messy room. He liked to play the video games, hang out with his friends. At the age of 16, Caleb made it known that he wanted to join the Marines. So he worked very hard in PT, and wanted to mentally and physically prepare himself, for those yellow footprints. He graduated in June of 2012, and on July 16th, he left to join those footsteps. He was in, his MOS was Motor T Mechanic. In September of 13, he went on his first and only deployment to Afghanistan, where he was killed by a suicide bomber. I know that I am never going to forget him, but by doing this, I would know that no one else would either. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you
for your testimony, yes. Proceed, Senator Perry.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And now we're going to call in the sister of Corporal Caleb Erickson. Rue, are you with us, Rue?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name for the record.
Rebecca Sika.
Go ahead.
Thank you, everyone, for being here today. My brother, Corporal Caleb Erickson, loved his community and country. This is why it's such an honor to have a highway named after him. As his sister, it is an honor and a great way to remember him. I frequently drive that stretch of road, and I will remember my brother with fondness and tell Caleb's niece and nephew the sacrifice he made, along with anyone who drives that stretch of road can tell their children about the sacrifice that he made. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sika. Mr. Senator Perry.
And now we'd like to call in a neighbor, a very close friend. We all, with our children, remember there's always seems to be one house that they all gather at all the time to get together. And this is that person's home, Peggy Zinnel.
Hi, my name is Peggy Zinnel. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. We have numerous memorial highways that are named throughout Minnesota. Those roads are named after a wide variety of groups and individuals. These individuals are politicians, authors, advocates, educators, business owners, architects, and musicians. You also have memorial highways named after law enforcement officers who lost their lives serving the state. There are memorial highways dedicated to the military, but mostly representing a specific group or veterans in general. You also have a few named after individuals that served. You have a general and a Medal of Honor recipient. Highway 13 should be a memorial named after Corporal Caleb Erickson, who grew up in Waseca and served his country proudly by giving the ultimate sacrifice. Naming this highway after him would recognize that sacrifice that he and his family have made to the freedom of this country. His name belongs with the name of the others that have represented this state with pride and honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peggy. Moving on, we have two testifiers left. I'd like to call in Sergeant Kyle Edward, who served with Caleb. Kyle, are you with us?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
And Mr. Edward, if you could just please state your name for our official record.
My name is Kyle Edwards. I just want to say thank you to everyone taking the time to be on this call today. Caleb was one of my best Marines. He worked hard. He did his job very proficiently. He was known as my AC guy. He fixed all the ACs for all the trucks and was very good at that. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, and so I fly into Waseca every year, and I make Mama take me down that road every single time so we can see, you know, the path that he took to his final resting place. And it means a lot to me for you guys to take this time for this consideration. He was a great Marine, and I think it's awesome that, you know, for children's, you know, in the future generations to see, you know, and be able to talk about Caleb and his story, his sacrifice. And I think it's a great memorial for, you know, the community of Waseca to see that. And again, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much for this honor to be on this call today.
Thank you very much. And Senator Perry.
And our final testifier today, Mr. Chairman and committee members, is call him Marty McNamara. And I know Marty, I saw him come on. Marty?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Corporal Martin McNamara, United States Marine Corps retired. I just wanted to say that Caleb Erickson, that his sacrifice wasn't just with his life. It was also in his daily actions. He was the kind of the guy that was like literally the embodiment, that old saying that he would give you the shirt off his back. He had my back every single day that we were outside the wire in Afghanistan. He was the gunner for my vehicle. I was there the day that we were hit. And he's not someone that I will ever forget. It's been said by Carla. It's been said by, you know, some of the other people helping push this bill. But the passing this bill would be not only just a great honor to immortalize him, but like the other representative said, to help other people that haven't necessarily heard his story, maybe look up his name when they see that sign on the highway. You know, my little boy actually already shares his name, but I can't think of a way that he would get more exposure to people that might not know his story than naming something as corporeal as a highway. So thank you.
Thank you so much for coming to our committee and your testimony.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank you, and I'd like to thank all our testifiers and just say one thing. I went to church with this young man, always a smile on his face, always making other people smile. What a wonderful young man he was, and how appropriate that both the Senate and the House are hearing this bill in the month that he died on February 28, 2014. Mr. Chairman and committee, that concludes all our testimony. Thank you.
Thank you so much for organizing this very moving testimony. And I think you painted a very, very appropriate and moving portrait of Corporal Caleb Erickson. And I'm very honored that you came here today to share his story with all of us and with the state of Minnesota. Representative Petersburg, did you want to make any closing comments before we vote?
No, we certainly will answer any questions as well, but I just want to say a thank you also to the committee for hearing this bill. I think it's a worthy cause, and I think remembering our fallen, especially those that sacrificed in line of duty, is something that we owe them, and this is something that I really support. So I will renew my motion that we refer House File 482 to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg, for that motion. And members, again, a reminder that all of our votes on final passage of bills are roll call votes. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Representative Barr?
Aye.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Murphy?
Murphy, aye.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Representative West?
Aye.
There are 16 ayes and 0 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Thank you, Representative Petersburg, and thank you to all of you who traveled virtually to our committee from Waseca. You've done your community proud, and I'm looking forward to seeing this road named after Corporal Erickson. So thank you so much for your testimony. Again, very moving and very fitting. and so important that we honor and memorialize our heroes. Members, we have one more bridge. This is a bridge naming. We had a highway before. Now we have a bridge. And is Representative Hansen with us?
Yes, I am.
Ah, welcome, Representative Hansen. I am going to move House File 29 to also to the Ways and Means Committee. And you can proceed with your testimony. And I know you have somebody that's also going to testify. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'd like to take you back in time a little bit, 76 years ago, to the Battle of Iwo Jima, which was one of the bloodiest battles in World War II. And as the greatest generation slips away, some of that immediate memory disappears. One of a soldier that was killed in the Battle of Iwo Jima, died of his wounds on February 20th, 1945, was Private Joseph G. Marthaler. And Marthaler is a well-known name in our district and in West St. Paul. And we were here 2 years ago to try to get the bridge named for Private Marthaler. We made some progress, but weren't ultimately successful. So we're back again asking for the committee's support for House File 29. This would be on Highway 52, a bridge near where the old Marthaler farm was. And I have a member of the family with us today to testify.
And I believe Ms. Marthaler, are you connected? I know you were earlier.
Yes, I am. I am Deborah.
Welcome
Marthaler.
To the committee. Yes, thank please state you. Your name for the welcome officially.
Deborah Marthaler. I am a niece of Joseph Marthaler. And I appreciate everybody taking this request today. My Uncle Joe was born and raised in West St. Paul, right at Highway 52 and Wentworth, where the bridge now exists. Joe graduated from St. Matthew's High School, and then, I'm sorry, grade school, and then he put himself through Creighton High School by setting pins in a manual bowling alley and working at the stockyards and being a caddy at Southview Country Club. While at Creighton, he was a member of their drill squad, their golf club, and their Catholic students' mission crusade. I never had the privilege of knowing Joe, as he was killed before I was born, but in his yearbook at Creighton, the comments about him stated, "Since Joe came to Creighton as a sophomore, his ready laugh and smile have won him many friends. Those qualities, along with his determination and ability, will make him a success." I think that kind of opens my eyes and our family's eyes as to what type of a man Joe was. He joined the Marines when he was 19, and he was killed on the second day of Iwo Jima, where almost 7,000 Marines lost their lives. We would like to have this bridge named after him, just so that future generations, when they go past, again, like the last crew said, maybe it will make them stop and think for a minute. And if they want to look Joe's history up, that's fine, but at least they'll be thinking about these people that gave their life for your freedom and mine. So also the... there's a local organization here in Dakota County called Support Our Troop Haunted House at the old fairgrounds, and they have agreed to pay the expenses for the signs, so I appreciate their assistance in this, and I appreciate your crew up there taking a look at it and hopefully passing it for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Marthaler. I don't know if anyone has any questions of Ms. Marthaler. But I'll just simply thank you, and thank you for your testimony. I know Representative Hansen and I share a deep interest not only in history, but particularly World War II history. So many Americans and allied soldiers died in defense of democracy and in opposition to fascism. And we are so indebted to all of them. And we're here, but for them. And, you know, I think today when we heard about Corporal Erickson and now Mr. Marthaler, this is really about honoring memory. And so I appreciate your being here so much. Representative Hansen, did you want to have any final comments?
Just I would ask for your support. This is important. We're nearing the anniversary of the battle again. And as every year goes by, it is harder to remember. And so having this memorial will help keep not only Private Marthaler's memory alive, but everyone who served in those battles. Thank you.
So thank you very much, members. I will renew my motion that we honor Private Marthaler with House File 29, which will be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And once again, members, this will be a roll call vote. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Petersburg.
Aye.
Representative Barr.
Aye.
Representative Bernardi.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Representative Hausman.
Aye.
Representative Heinrich.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative Murphy.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Representative Torkelson.
Aye.
Representative West.
Aye.
There are 17 ayes and 0 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Thank you very much, Representative Hansen. And you are on your way to Ways and Means. And thank you, Ms. Marthaler, again for coming to our committee. Members, our next item of business is taking up House File 502. This is Representative Moeller's bill, and I am going to move House File 502 to the Public Safety Committee, and that is officially the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Finance and Policy Committee. And there is welcome to the committee again. I know you've had a couple bills here with us in the past. It's great to see you again, Representative Moeller. And I know that you have an amendment, so I wanted to see if we could just incorporate the A1 amendment so that you can get the bill in the shape that you'd like us to consider it. And if you could just give us maybe a brief description of your bill and then the A1 amendment, and then we can vote on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's good to be back in front of your committee again. And this is a DWI task force bill. I'd be glad to explain it in more detail. Would you like me to do the amendment first, though?
Let's do the amendment first, and then we can consider the whole bill. But let us know just very briefly the amendment.
Sure. So this amendment essentially eliminates the fiscal note. With this bill, this bill started last year right before the pandemic. We were really surprised when we got the original fiscal note. And we realized that it was because there were fees associated with the whiskey plates, and when the plates are reinstated again, and we didn't mean to exclude those fees. We wanted this to be cost neutral. So this amendment just fixes that to make sure that this bill is cost neutral.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. And I will, if I haven't said that already, I'll move the A1. Is there any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, this is one where we can do a voice vote, I believe. And all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, the motion carries. Now we have House File 502 as amended before. We have House File 502 as amended before us, Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a DWI task force bill, members, and it has a very broad group of stakeholders. There's a one-pager in your packet of information, and that not only describes some of the highlights of the bill, but also lists the group of stakeholders at the bottom, and you can see that it's a very diverse group of stakeholders. This is also a bipartisan bill. As I mentioned before, we started the process last year, but then the pandemic started, and so we just put it on hold for this year. But really, it's not something that we should keep on hold, because the purpose of the bill is to make our roads safer for Minnesotans through the use of ignition interlock and also removing unnecessary barriers that are currently in place that make our roads less safe. As I mentioned, this is a bipartisan bill, and I've had the pleasure of working with Representative Baker on it, and he is also here, and he would like to explain his support of the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Moeller. Representative Baker, it is so wonderful to, for you to drop by the Transportation Committee. I have a lot of wonderful memories of seeing you on transportation issues in Willmar, and I just very, very pleased that you're here. Welcome to the committee, and even though you're a colleague, I still think I'm required to ask you to state your name for the record.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you for that warm welcome. Representative Dave Baker, I represent the Kaneohe County Willmar area, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I wanted to, again, throw my support to Representative Moeller's bill on bringing safer roads to Minnesota through some really smart policy reforming that we need to do in regards to when people make mistakes, when they drive, when they're intoxicated. And I will tell you, the group of stakeholders on this have really thought through this very, very well. The one bill that brought really Representative Moeller and I together was we had a bit of a clone bill when it came to the whiskey plate issues that I've had. Just understanding how the interlock ignition system works today that didn't exist when the W plate, or what we call the whiskey plates, were put on vehicles. And at one time they were put on so that police officers could pull you over at any time for without reason, because before the interlock system existed, they wanted to make sure that you actually were indeed sober and you could drive the car, but you were identified and stamped and basically kind of publicly shamed, if you will, to make sure that if you want to drive a car, we're going to make sure that we can pull you over at any time. Since then, again, we've come a long way with the world of addiction and the world of the disease of addiction. And we know that people make mistakes. People just make mistakes. They own businesses. They actually have children, and children drive to schools with vehicles that are in the person who actually did the offense. And what we've had to do over many years is work through this process that people that owned cars and people that drove those cars had to put a W plate on it because that person was the owner of that car. So if a daughter or a son had to drive to high school, they had to drive that car with that W plate. And a lot of people look at that and they instantly come up with a stigma about that. And I think that we're at a place today where we don't need to do that. Interlock, the system of the interlock ignition has done great things to make sure that people that want to drive a car can do so safely. And the bottom line of this is that there's a lot of people that either you own a business or they won't drive a car, but they will ignore the fact that I cannot put a W plate on my vehicle. It's too much of a public image on me, on my family, my business. And I think that we are seeing far too many people not do that. And likely they may be driving illegally without having the right system in place for them to do that. We think that the reform that the DWI task force has done, along with Representative Moeller, and the work that they've done on this is really thought through. This is going to, I think, have a lot more people get the interlock system without having to change or to the stamp of the W on the license plate any longer. So I'm gonna end my comments there. I think this is a really good thought through bill that actually will put more drivers with the interlock in their vehicles. The cars will be safer to drive on the roads. And I think that we can do some really good things with this legislation. So again, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Moeller, for allowing me to speak on this as well. I'm with you the whole way. This is an important bill. So thank you again.
Thank you so much, Representative Baker, and I've just so appreciated your passion and your empathy on issues like this. And it's rare, it's needed, and so appreciated. So thank you for coming, and thank you for your testimony and just adding your voice to this. I think it matters a lot to the body, you know, when you show up like this.
Thank you. Thank you.
So members, we, Representative Mueller, I think you have one more testifier.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. David Bernstein from the DWI Task Force is here.
Welcome, Mr. Bernstein. Welcome to the Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is David Bernstein, and I'm the chair of Minnesota's DWI Task Force. As Representative Mueller indicated, the DWI Task Force is a very diverse group of individuals who have concerns about DWIs. We are not politically affiliated. We are not funded. We are a purely volunteer organization that meets monthly to discuss DWI case law, media, and legislation. We have come together and drafted this bill. We thank Representative Mueller and Representative Baker for their support, and this is a bipartisan bill. The Minnesota DWI Task Force's goal is to eliminate impaired driving and to make our roads safer. An ignition interlock accomplishes that. It does ensure that we have sober drivers on Minnesota's roads. Unfortunately, right now, ignition interlock is very much underutilized. Less than half of DWI offenders enroll in ignition interlock. And there are various reasons for that, but the stakeholders of the DWI Task Force have identified a number of barriers or a lack of incentives to enroll in ignition interlock. And this bill corrects that. It eliminates some unnecessary barriers, and it provides incentives for individuals to enroll in ignition interlock. So that, as Representative Baker indicated, rather than having people ignore the whiskey plate provision and drive illegally, this allows someone to drive legally on Minnesota's roadways with ignition interlock installed. And so this bill very much protects public safety. As Representative Mueller indicated, there are a number of organizations that have provided their support as organizations that are listed on the one pager. We have vetted this bill, and we believe it's very much supported. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that any committee members have. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Bernstein. Are there questions from the committee? I actually forgot to ask if there were questions of Representative Baker, but for either testifier, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the issues that I'd like to kind of address as well is if there are any folks that are unnecessarily getting ignition interlock. This is an issue that I've been dealing with my brother, who's trying to get his driver's license reinstated and never had any alcohol offenses. His offenses were all related to drugs. And so right now he's going through the process of trying to get his driver's license reinstated and is required to have an ignition interlock, which for him, he could still go use drugs and blow into that interlock and, you know, be clear to drive. And so, you know, it seems like kind of one of those unnecessary burdens that we're putting on somebody who, you know, the time or the punishment doesn't really fit the crime. And he said that he'd be more than willing to get weekly drug tests or whatever, you know, they needed to do. But for him, it's going to be really expensive to get an interlock system when it doesn't even pertain to the reason why he had his DWIs. And so I'm hoping that the task force is looking at that as well, because he's been sober for almost 5 years and has been working in the recovery field, but it's a major barrier for him. And he lives in California. So, you know, you're kind of car dependent out there as well. And so I really look, hope that the DWI task force is also looking at some of those issues where requiring people to have an ignition interlock is actually a barrier and is not something that fits their situations.
Thank you, Vice Chair Cagle. I'm thinking that maybe that would be something that Mr. Bernstein could comment on, since Vice Chair Cagle talked a little bit about the task force and its mission and its role and vision. Mr. Bernstein?
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and Vice Chair Cagle. I'm going to provide condensed three-part answer to your question. The first part is the DWI task force is looking at the statutes that require ignition interlock, and we are looking at the treatment of alcohol-related DWIs and drug-related DWIs. We want to ensure that everyone's treated fairly and that the statutes are consistent with keeping Minnesota's roads safe. So that is something that the Minnesota DWI Task Force is actively looking at. The second part of my answer is the DWI Task Force is currently working with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety to propose a bill this session for an oral fluid pilot project that would collect a saliva sample from an individual. And it is our hope down the road, pending technological advances, that perhaps ignition interlock could be modified to provide a saliva sample to detect for the presence of drugs. I don't know how far out we might be, but that's obviously a goal. And finally, I would acknowledge that this bill certainly doesn't solve all the problems, but it is absolutely a step in the right direction. Minnesota is only one of three states that currently utilizes whiskey plates, and which, as Representative Baker said, serve no purpose. In fact, the Minnesota Supreme Court has held that officers cannot pull over a vehicle for having a whiskey plate. So at least that would improve that portion of the law and provide a better alternative to keep Minnesota's roads safe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bernstein. Did either Representative Baker or Representative Moeller want to add any comments to Representative Cagle's question? No? Okay, great.
And Mr. Chair, that pilot project is actually a bill I'm carrying, so I'm glad that that's okay. Part of it.
All right, well, we'll have to hear that bill, Vice Chair Cagle. Let me just make sure I'm going to scan the committee here. I don't see anyone else with questions. So Representative Cagle, did you want to make any closing comments? Or not, I'm sorry, Representative Moeller, did you want to, sorry. Did you want to make any closing comments?
I would, Mr. Chair. I see a hand just popped up.
Oh, okay. That's good. Hold on. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please. Go ahead with your question, Representative Olson.
Just a real quick question. When we're talking about the starter, the ignition interlock thing, is that the breathalyzer that they have to breathe into? I know a case where I had there was an individual who had her child breathe into it in order to start the vehicle, and she got child endangerment and another DWI on top of that. So I was just curious. I know it doesn't really have anything to do with this bill. I was just wanting to get straight what we're talking about.
Well, we thank you very much, Representative Wilson. I think you've got three experts here. Is that, again, Mr. Bernstein, is that one that you would want to take?
I can, Mr. Chair and Representative Olson. Yes, ignition interlock attaches to the car's ignition system, and so it requires an individual to blow into a tube and provide a breath sample. If the sample provides an alcohol concentration or measures an alcohol concentration of 0.02 or greater, the car does not start. I understand what you're saying. Most ignition interlock systems are equipped with video cameras, and so they record who is blowing into the tube. And so that is something that is actively monitored, and I believe those feeds are sent very quickly to ignition interlock vendors and probation officers.
Thank you. Representative Wilson, did you have a follow-up?
No, that is absolutely perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your question, Representative Wilson. Okay, let's see. I'll scan one more time, and I don't see any more hands up. So now, Representative Moeller, if you wanted to make some final comments, and then we'll move your bill on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have much more to add. I just would encourage members to also look at the letters of support that are in your packets from the broad group of stakeholders that are involved with this bill, and just want to thank you again, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing this bill. Representative Baker, for your support and passion for this issue. Mr. Bernstein and all the members of the DWI task force who have worked so hard on this, and I hope we can count on your support with your vote today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Mueller. And with that, I would renew my motion that House File 502, as amended, be referred to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Finance and Policy Committee. So members, please unmute yourself. This will be a roll call vote. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Weinstein?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Representative Barr?
Aye.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Murphy?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Representative West?
Aye.
There are 17 ayes and zero nays.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Thank you again, Representative Mueller, and we wish you success in moving this bill along. It's a great bill, and appreciate your hard work on it, and also to Representative Baker and Mr. Bernstein. Thank you. Okay, members, next up on the agenda is House File 32. This is a bill from another committee member, Representative Elkins. And Representative Elkins, I'm going to have you move your bill. I'll give you that honor. But I did want to just note, members, that this is a bill for electric assist bicycle classification and regulation. And this will need to move to the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee because it has a fiscal note. So there's a small general fund cost to the DNR. This is not in our budget area, members. So that's why it's going to the Environment Committee. So Representative Elkins, thank you very much. I don't need to welcome you as well because you are a member of the committee, but I will give you the opportunity to move your bill, and then you can explain it. And I understand you have several testifiers as well. Representative Elkins.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to move that we advance this bill along to the Environmental Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee because, as you said, it does have a small fiscal note that would have DNR develop a set of implementation guidelines for state trails around the state. And with that, I would like to introduce Doreen Greeley from the Minnesota Bicycle Alliance, who will briefly describe the bill, and I think he has a colleague who will be doing most of the detailed explanation and answering questions as well.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. And Mr. Greeley, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dorian Greeley. I work for the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. Several years ago, I came before this committee asking you to update the definitions in Chapter 169 to make e-bikes, I'll call them e-bikes instead of electric-assisted bikes, under a certain power threshold, and that went up to 20 miles an hour as bicycles, not motor vehicles. Today I'm here with thanks to Representative Elkins and the other authors to present House File 32. It simply is an update that will make Minnesota statutes current and consistent with other states and countries, the current and national and international manufacturing standards, and with the bicycles that are currently being sold at bike shops statewide. A couple of weeks ago, you heard from Eric of Eric's Bike Shop that the sales of e-bikes are going up by about 100% or more for the last several years. You'll also hear today from Morgan from the National Advocacy and Trade Association, called People for Bikes. Bikemen worked on a draft, on this draft, with Morgan and Matt Moore, general counsel at Quality Bicycle Products in Bloomington, and others. And as I think you know, QBP is one of the largest wholesalers of bike parts in the world.
And located in my district.
And located. So I'll just take a minute here to explain to you the bill. Section 1 simply clarifies that e-bikes are not off-highway motorcycles or off-road vehicles. These are just the major things that I think need to be highlighted here. Section 4 clarifies that an e-bike is not a motor vehicle. It is a bicycle, and that's currently our state statute, which was changed a few years ago, several years ago. Section 5 really starts with what's new. And the new thing is a three-class system. The class 1 bicycle, e-bike, is more or less what's currently defined as an e-bike in our current state statutes. It has a pedal assist and will go up to 20 miles an hour. A class 2 e-bike does not require a pedal assist, but still has the ability to go 20 miles an hour. So it would have a throttle, and you could go up to 20 miles an hour. A class 3 bike does require pedal assist, but can go up to 28 miles an hour. And I think Morgan will take a few minutes to explain why these classifications make sense and fit with the international laws and manufacturing standards. Section 8 updates the definition and requirements to reflect the three-class system. And there really aren't many significant changes in the Section 9 and 10, but Section 11 updates the riding rules to reflect the three-class system. I think the thing to highlight here is that the same rules and ability to regulate as before apply to class 1 and 2, and that it highlights the clarification that state and local authorities can regulate class 3 bikes on paths and trails. The last section, number 12, is basically the manufacturing requirements. It requires a brake that turns the motor off when the brake is applied, labeling, and a speedometer on a class 3 e-bike. So now I suggest that we turn it back to you, the chair, and hear from Morgan from People for Bikes, and then the two of us, along with Matt Moore from Quality Bicycle Products, can answer questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Grilley, and I think that is a good suggestion. Let's get through the testimony first, and then we'll have Q&A from the committee. So then Morgan Lamelli would be next, then as your next testifier, Mr. Grilley?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Hornstein and Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. My name is Morgan Lamelli. I'm the State and Local Policy Director at People for Bikes.
Welcome, Ms. Lamelli, and you can proceed with your testimony.
Wonderful. Thank you. Hello, everyone. People for Bikes is the sole industry trade association in the United States. We have a number of corporate members in Minnesota and thousands of individual supporters, not the least Quality Bicycle Products, who you'll hear from today. I've assisted our trade association and our members pass this kind of law in 28 states to date, including neighboring South Dakota and Wisconsin, and bills are pending and moving along quite well in Iowa and North Dakota. So the intent of Senate File 32 would be to do the same, to modernize Minnesota's traffic law so that low-speed electric bicycles are recognized as bicycles. And what that does is it really clears up significant confusion we're seeing at the small retail level in the state, and confusion on behalf of their customers about around where you can ride this type of bicycle. So providing sensible rules for their use helps that small business environment, and then helps get more people outside riding bicycles. If you're not familiar, electric bicycles are, they're made, sold, and used like traditional bicycles, and they're essentially bicycles with a boost. The only difference is that they carry that unique ability to encourage more people to get out and ride, regardless of age or physical or cognitive ability. They make bike riding a little bit easier and just as safe. They're inclusive to a wide variety of needs and abilities, and really provide a new way for people to experience the outdoors. And I always kind of mention my own example and my own experience. Thanks to my electric bicycle, I can carry my family around by bike and do more by bike, not so much as a car replacement or a bike replacement, but something that really bridges the gap between the two. So the classification system you see in Senate File 32 would align Minnesota law with the three main forms of product that are currently on the marketplace, and with the federal definition of an electric bicycle that defines the manufacturing and consumer product safety standards. So an important distinction is that low-speed electric bicycles are defined as consumer products at the federal government level and not as motor vehicles. And I am mistaken. It's House File Senate 32, not Senate File, but that's a clarification. So much needed update to Minnesota traffic laws. It's consistent with state laws passed in the majority of states across the country, the products that bicycle manufacturers are currently manufacturing and the products that retailers are currently selling. One last thing, we've seen this bill codified in those 28 states without any real issues to public safety, but have really helped expand the number of people who get out and ride bikes. So Chairman, thank you for the time today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Lomelli. We have one more testifier, and that would be Matt Moore, Representative Elkins?
I believe so, yes, from Quality Bicycle.
Okay. Mr. Moore, welcome to the Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Matt Moore.
Okay, you can proceed with your testimony, Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Chair. I am the General Counsel for Quality Bicycle Products, which is a leading distributor of bicycle products and bicycles, both nationally and internationally. We are headquartered in Bloomington. I'm also on the board of directors of People for Bikes, where I'm happy to work with Morgan on passage of e-bike reform laws across the country. And finally, but not least, I am a volunteer on the legal committee over at the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota, and have worked with Dorian for many years on reforming and modernizing Minnesota's bicycle laws. So again, QBP, international distributor. We have about 800 employees, headquartered in Bloomington, where we've resided for since 1986, I believe we were founded. We sell e-bikes, e-bike parts, repair parts to some 8,000 retail shops across Minnesota. Virtually every bicycle shop in Minnesota is one of our customers, including Eric the Bike Man. I believe he was Eric the Bike Kid when QBP was in the early years. And we also have several hundred suppliers, including Minnesota companies like Head Wheels from Roseville, Park Tool Company in St. Paul. They are important to us as well. E-bikes are the single fastest growing category in the bicycle industry, and maybe really an unintended consequence of the pandemic. Many people have taken up cycling, and e-bikes are commonly a choice for new cyclists. They like the ability to have a motor assist to help them with the pedaling. So they're very popular, especially with many seniors who are trying to stay active during this time. So modernizing Minnesota's e-bike law to bring it into conformity with neighboring states and states across the country will really help support all of these businesses, these local businesses, and it will eliminate some of the technical barriers to e-bike sales and use that that Dorian has described. At the same time, it will preserve local management of e-bikes, especially class three bikes, which have a little bit higher top speed and can cause concerns and should rightfully be regulated as seen fit by local land managers. And lastly, the labeling requirements allow consumers to clearly identify which sort of e-bike they're buying and know that those bicycles have been tested by manufacturers and conform to those power and speed requirements. I think that concludes my remarks. I just urge the committee to move House File 32 along, and I'm happy to, with my colleagues, to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Moore. And yes, we had, for this panel of three testifiers, we can now take questions from the committee. And if you have a question, please direct it to one of the members or one of the testifiers. And our first question comes from Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is very interesting, and I'm certainly not opposed to the bill. But I am curious about safety statistics. Will the result of this bill result in keeping separate safety statistics for the different types of electric bikes that are out there? And are those statistics being gathered as we speak? I don't know who to address that
to, Mr. Chair. Throw that out to any of the testifiers or the author. Question on statistics. Mr. Moore.
I can speak to that, Representative Torkelson. E-bikes are also regulated by the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and they, of course, have a broad scope of protecting consumers everywhere in the United States. And we, People for Bikes, has participated in some recent meetings with them where e-mobility in general was discussed along with e-bikes. There are not, the primary source of statistics is emergency room reports from physicians who treat people. You know, they note whether this was a football injury, a fall in the home, or involved a bicycle accident. I believe that that statistical data gathering system is going to start breaking out e-mobility devices, including e-bikes. There are not good statistics now on that. They're more anecdotal. At this point, I don't think there's any statistical evidence that e-bikes are less safe than regular bikes. They seem to be involved in accidents, the same sort of accidents as regular bicycles. But as their use grows, it will be important to track those and try and countervail any trends that emerge. Is that responsive to your question?
Thank you, Mr. Moore. And Representative Torkelson, did you have a follow-up?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a follow-up question, just a remark that I've anecdotally witnessed electric bikes kind of whizzing down the road and just kind of wondered if there are some safety concerns there, because there is a temptation to travel along rather quickly, even uphill. And speed, speed can cause problems. So I just hope that we keep an eye on that moving forward so we keep our citizens as safe as possible. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, testifiers.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
One at a time here. And first of all, thank you, Representative Torkelson, for that question. It was on my mind, too. But let's have Representative Elkins, and then I think maybe I heard someone else's voice after that can chime in. But Representative Elkins.
Yeah, I think I've had the same experiences, traveling along on the Midtown Greenway, tooling along at 14 or 15 miles per hour on my regular bike, and had e-bikes zoom past me as well. So I know well of what Representative Torkelson speaks. And to Mr. Moore's comment, I suspect that what we're talking about is the addition of an additional ICD-10 code that's specific to e-bikes. So that it would basically, if that were the case, it would start showing up in claims data submitted through the medical claims processes. So I understand that flow of data. So, yeah, and then I think someone else did want to speak up on that as well.
I heard another voice. Was there?
Sure, that was my voice.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Please proceed. Yes, please proceed. I would love to hear your perspective on this.
Sure. The representative did point out that the reporting codes and the hospital codes will probably all evolve to give us better data. And so that's wonderful. I consider three other metrics to look at when we're really trying to analyze whether these products are as safe as bicycles. And in the news, number one would be in the news, really no anecdotal evidence showing that there are different implications to public safety with the onset of electric bikes, which is really encouraging. Studies do exist showing that the average speeds of electric bicycles are a little bit faster than traditional bicycles, and no one would be surprised by that. But we can't confuse that top-assisted speed you'll see in the bill with the average speeds. The average speeds are significantly lower than 20 or 28. And the third would just be reporting at hospitals. Small studies show that the number of folks that incur a crash or an incident on an electric bicycle is pretty similar to bicycles today, even though, as the representative mentioned, that reporting might not be as accurate as we'd like. So just very generally speaking, we're encouraged that electric bicycle ridership seems to be as safe as bicycle ridership.
Thank you, Ms. Lomely, for that. We have one more question from Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, I remember when we started talking about bike trails and other things along roadways and so forth, trying to get people into walking and riding bikes for health purposes. Obviously, with electric assisted, it's that kind of downplays some of that because you're not getting quite as much health issues. That's beside the moment. But I can certainly understand where it's growing in popularity because at, you know, even 15 miles an hour, you're not too much different than what residential traffic is. You don't need a driver's license. You have less restrictions, less requirements for it. So it would make sense for that piece. My question, though, is just brief, and I think manufacturers can tell me, what is the distance on a recharge for an e-bike, and is that is it different for various manufacturers?
Who would like to take that? Mr. Moore, it looks like you're leaning into this question literally.
I will speak to this. You know, with a pedal assist bike, and all of e-bikes have basically a fuel gauge that tells you what sort of charge you have on the bicycle. But they typically have a 20 to 40 mile range, depending on the usage. And how much pedaling you do, how much exercise you can actually change the mode. You know, if your battery is running low, you can reduce the assist that you provide, so you can still get home. So battery technology is evolving, as we've seen with electric cars as well. As the batteries get better, the range improves.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Representative Petersburg, did you have a follow up?
No, Mr. Chair, that's good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Let me just final call for committee questions here. Seeing none, Representative Elkins, did you want to make any final comments, and then you can renew your motion?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I am aware of research that shows that the people who buy e-bikes actually do get somewhat more exercise because it makes it easier to get out, and they just ride more often. So, in fact, I think, as I recall, the study I read says that they get an amount of exercise is comparable to a person with a regular bicycle just because they use them more often. So with that comment, I will restate my motion that we'll advance House File 32 to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, Finance, and Policy.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. So to the motion to re-refer House File 32 to the Environment and Natural Resources, Finance, and Policy Committee, Mr. Dodge will take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Representative Barr?
Aye.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Murphy? Representative Murphy? Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Representative West?
Aye.
There are 16 ayes and 0 nays.
Thank you, members. Congratulations, Representative Elkins. You're on your way to the to Representative Hansen's committee. And now we have one more bill, members, for the afternoon. And Representative Elkins, you can just stay seated at our virtual testifiers table. And I will just introduce this bill to the committee. This bill, House File 271, is going to go to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law because of its data provisions. We heard this bill last year. It is about shared mobility programs in user data classified as private. So, Representative Elkins, again, I will give you the honor of moving your own bill as a member of the committee, and we will hear your motion and then the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll move to introduce House File 32 and move that we refer it to the Committee on Judiciary and Civil Law, Finance, and Policy.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, and proceed with the bill.
This is John.
Oh, Mr. Howe.
I want to clarify that Representative Elkins said House File 271.
271, yes. Okay, I've got too much paper in front of me here. Sorry. I think I probably said 32.
Good catch. Good catch, Mr. Howe. So, members, just to clarify, we are moving, Representative Elkins is moving House File 271 to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee, and you can proceed. You can proceed, Representative Elkins.
So, we did pass this bill, and in fact, it passed both this committee and Judiciary and Civil Law and made it to the floor. But those slackers in the Senate didn't move, even though Senator Limmer was a co-author on the bill in the Senate. And I think it just got caught up in COVID. So we're going to try and move it through this year. Pretty simple. It's a data practices addition. So as most of us know, under the Minnesota Data Practices Act, any data in government hands is assumed to be public information. Unless there is a provision in the Data Practices Act that that states otherwise. So, and so we keep having to add provisions to the state Data Practices Act every time technology results in the new generation of a new category of data. So this new category of data is data that is generated by shared mobility companies like the scooter companies, Uber and Lyft. And increasingly, state and local governments around the country are beginning to take this information because it is useful for planning purposes. The only example that I'm aware of in Minnesota right now is the city of Minneapolis, which is taking data from the scooter companies in order to establish, you know, where are the scooters being picked up and dropped off? Are they being collected promptly? Are they being distributed equitably? And to their credit, the city of Minneapolis is doing an absolutely exemplary job of handling this data appropriately. The data, raw data, comes in a format known as the Open Mobility Mobility Data Specification, which was originally developed by the city of Los Angeles and has been adopted as a nationwide standard. And the standard data feed under that specification is extremely detailed and includes information about trip origins and destinations, names, contact information, form of payment information, information that any of us would be consider very, very sensitive personal information. In the case of Minneapolis, they're actually stripping all of the personal information off of the file as they receive it and before they even write the data to disk. In addition, are aggregating the locations of the data so that the origins and destinations are only specified to the level of the midpoint center point of the block. So there's no address data in it at all. But nonetheless, other cities or counties or state agencies could also begin taking this data and might not be treating it in the same way that Minneapolis is doing right now. So what this bill would basically says is that to the extent that state and local governments in Minnesota are taking the data in this very detailed format, that we would consider it private data and not subject to Data Practices Act requests.
Thank you very much, Representative Elkins, for that explanation of your bill. I am going to ask the committee, and you don't have testifiers, correct, Representative Elkins? Okay, just going to ask the committee if they have any questions on House File 271. I'm going to give folks a couple of little bit of time here to gather themselves. And Representative Elkins, I don't see any questions, so
it's pretty straightforward.
Okay, good. I appreciate that. And so, members, then, if you want to renew your motion for House File 271, then we'll take a vote.
Renew my vote motion that we re-refer this to House File 271 to the Commission Committee on Judiciary and Civil Law, Finance, and Policy.
Excellent. Members, this, again, is a roll call vote. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Representative Barr?
Aye.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Murphy? Representative Murphy?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Representative West? Representative West? Representative West? Bill, 16 ayes and 0 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge, and thank you, Representative Elkins. You're on your way to the Judiciary Committee and Civil Law. So thank you, members, for a productive day here and the Transportation Committee. I just wanted to, that is it in terms of the bills we're hearing, and we have no other business before the committee. I just wanted to give folks a little bit of a preview for next week. We are going to hear, again, some more bills, but in addition to that, we have a couple of informational sessions on Tuesday. We're going to be hearing from the Department of Public Safety. We had, of course, a lot of discussion. Representative Torkelson and I spent quite a bit of time over the last couple of years on MnLARS, the transition from MnLARS to MnDrive. We are going to get an update from the Department of Public Safety and Driver and Vehicle Services on how that is going. We're going to also hear from MnDOT on the state of the trunk highway bond finance situation with them. That's a very critical part of the work that we do here in this committee. The whole bonding regimen is key, and so we want to figure out what our bonding capacity is and how we can work on that moving forward. And so that'll be something from MnDOT. And on Thursday, we're going to continue this a little bit of this. Today we talked a little about bike electrification, but then we're going to talk about more electrification on Thursday and throughout the whole transportation system. And then we'll also hear some bills again, both on Tuesday and Thursday. So members, is there any other questions or items before the committee that anyone wants to raise, announcements? Representative Cagle.
Just like to compliment Representative Koznick on his bold choice of green lipstick.
That is just noted. That is noted. Is there anything else? Any other observations or announcements before we adjourn? Seeing none, our meeting today is adjourned. Have a good weekend, and we will see you on Tuesday, February 16th at 1 p.m. Thank you very much, members. We're adjourned.